colors that you fly. Love just one nation. In the whole world we divide. You say you're sorry. There is no other choice. God bless the people now. Cannot raise their voice. We can chase down all our enemies, bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. Whoa. Violence brings one thing, more and more of the same. Military madness, smell of flesh and burning pain. So I sing out to the masses, stand up if you're still sane. All of us gone crazy. I sing this one refrain. We can chase down all our enemies, bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. Whoa.
Contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
When Nicole Sandler sits down to do her show, she's the producer, booking the guests, pulling the audio, running the show, the engineer, running the controls, troubleshooting any problems, playing the sounds, calling the guests, and she's the webmaster, writing the blog, posting the podcast, maintaining the website, not to mention the host, interviewing the guests, explaining the issues, giving opinions, and calling out the bad guys. And then you get the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
on. We've made it to a Thursday, and my equipment is working. Oh, thank goodness for small miracles. Before I get started, I just need to start and say that I have the best listeners ever. You guys are remarkable. First of all, I had mentioned a couple of weeks ago that it was my daughter's 18th birthday. Well, listener Mona in New York makes beautiful jewelry. She's made me some beautiful pieces before. Drops with my logo on it, necklaces, earrings and bracelets, beautiful things. And she sent Allison a gorgeous set of necklace and earrings for her 18th birthday. And so Mona just arrived, and I had to say thank you. I also have been remiss in thanking listeners Marlene and Sue, because like so many of you, I've been going through a rough time. You know, forget the health issues. The Trump issues are, you know, enough to make any sane person crazy. And Marlene and Sue sent me a stress reliever that they call Thump the Trump. They write, whenever you're down, just thump him in the balls. She said, I like to do it first thing in the morning. It gets my day off to a good start. I hope this works for you. We love your show. So if you're watching on the YouTube, this is the Thump the Trump. And it's a wooden little Trump with a red tie that goes down way too long. And he's got these two balls hanging from, well, look, what appear to be a zipper and a little leather peeny, teeny weeny peeny. And you just thump him. It's quite funny. And I do have them sitting here in a place of honor in my studio. There are days I get really mad. There I want to throw them. But I know that it was made with, you know, the love of a couple of listeners. So I thank you for that. And I thank you all for your donations, because as I say every day in the What's New segment, you know, this show is 100% listener supported. I don't have advertising. Not that I'm allergic to advertisers or anything, but as you just heard Boca say in the announcement at the start of the show, I do everything myself, and there are only so many hours in a day, and I've never been much of a salesperson. I've done everything in radio but sales. Not to say I couldn't start at some point, and maybe that's my next job. But for now, you know, this keeps me busy. So when you send in a donation, whether it's $5 or $500, and I've had people do both, I can't thank you enough. It means the world to me. Okay, now on to the news. You know, I do What's News every morning. And it has been getting more and more difficult to put a 6-minute top of the hour newscast together. And, you know, the way I like to do it is inject some humor and snark and music and fun. And if you've noticed over the last week or so, they've pretty much been straight news because there's so much going on. And it's really difficult, number one, to keep it down to 6 minutes. Number two, to have fun with it, obviously. After the Manchester bombing, there was nothing funny or fun about it. But there are days I just don't even have time to inject a little musical refrain that will add a stinger onto a story. It's just it's either time or there's just nothing fun or funny about it. So we'll get to What's News today in a little while. There's a lot of stuff, but there was so much I couldn't fit into it that I thought we'd start the show today talking about some of those stories. And if you have any that you think I missed, feel free to call in and add, because that's what we do here. 954-889-6410 is the number, or you can Skype in to Nicole Sandler. Anyway, first things first, I feel sorry for Sean Spicer. I do. This guy, no, I don't feel that sorry for him. I mean, he took the job and he lies his ass off to protect a really horrific person. That said, I feel sorry for him. He went to, you know, he's on this trip with Trump, and I can't imagine that that's any fun. Although traveling the world, you would think would be fun in a big private jet, but look who he has to travel with, right? But one thing I didn't know about Sean Spicer is he is a devout Catholic. And all Spicy wanted was to get to meet the Pope. Now, Trump took his Orthodox Jewish daughter and son-in-law, yes, Ivanka converted, so that she could marry Jared. And they went to meet the Pope. Along with a number of others in their entourage, Spicy was left behind. He was not allowed to go. there's something really wrong. That's just, what's the word I'm looking for? That's just wrong. That's just really fucked up on Trump's part. You know, the one thing he wanted to do is, meet the Pope. Let him meet the Pope, for God's sake. Leave one of the Jews at home. They don't need to meet the Pope. They got to go to the Western Wall in Israel and do all the cool things for Jews. Let the Catholic meet the Pope. But they didn't. And poor Spicy, once he gets home, you know, he's going to be relieved of his daily presser briefings. Not that that will upset him too much, but who knows? Maybe it will, because that's his job. And when you're not allowed to do the job that you're hired to do, it takes its toll on you. Now, one person Trump didn't take with him on the trip was Ben Carson, and that's a good thing. Did I not pull? Oh, I did pull the Ben Carson clip. Ben Carson, who is the ultimate ugly American, Trumantown. You are exactly right. He's the epitome. We were watching the news last night. I'm a stickler for the way men dress. I have a thing about neckties. I think they're so stupid. I think eventually they're going to go the way of the wigs that, you know, they wore at the time of the founding fathers, you know, in British courts, and then they brought them over here, and in Congress they'd wear those stupid wigs. Right? Those eventually went away. I think the necktie is going to do the same thing. It is a stupid piece of clothing. I guess maybe it used to serve the purpose of a napkin, where if you were a messy eater, it would keep the food from dropping on your shirt. But the necktie serves no purpose, unless I guess you want to hang yourself. I don't know. I'm often obsessed with men's jackets. Because I see when they sit down, they unbutton them, and they stand up, they button them, except the one person who never buttons it is Donald Trump. Did you notice that? There was a picture at one of the debates that we were watching on TV last night, and David backed it up. He said, watch this, because they panned, you know, the crowd of however many Republicans were on that debate stage at the beginning, and they go down the line, and he said to me, look at them, and see which, you know, one of them, there's something standing out. And sure enough, Dump was the only one who didn't have his jacket buttoned. And even today, I mean, I don't know if it's a sign of disrespect or just that you don't give a shit or that you're a fat slob. And I'm not one to talk about anybody else's weight. I get that. But really, keep a nice appearance. You're the president of the goddamn United States. Anyway, Trump didn't take Ben Carson with him. And that's a good thing. Now, Ben Carson, for whatever reason, is now the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. And he was doing an interview on radio, and he actually said this.
I think poverty, to a large extent, is also a state of mind. You has the right mindset.
What?
You can take everything from them and put them on the street. And I guarantee you, in a little while, they'll be right back up there. And you take somebody with the wrong mindset, you can give them everything in the world. They'll work their way back down to the bottom.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way, you mental midget. I get that he's a brain surgeon, but my God, let him keep doing brain surgery and get him out of the court of public opinion. He doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. Not an ounce. And to make matters even worse, the other revelation I had last night while we were watching TV and I heard that quote is, and Rick Perry went from Dancing with the Stars to become Secretary of Energy. My God, are we fucked. Anyway, there's more going on in the world, yes, that I didn't have time to fit into what's news today. And the next thing I realized is we'd never talked about the Duterte call. You know, Rodrigo Duterte, that little piece of shit who runs the Philippines, and we thought the Marcoses were bad, right? This guy is, he's got his war on drugs, and the way he fights his war on drugs is by killing people. That's right. So what does Donald Trump do? He calls him and says that, Rachel Maddow has a little bit on it. Well, let me first play, this is CNN's little piece on the leaked call.
An extraordinary conversation where Donald Trump again seems to heap praise on a strong man. On the phone with Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte, President Trump says, quote, I just wanted to congratulate you because I am hearing of the unbelievable job on the drug problem. What a great job you are doing. Human rights observers criticize the president for praising Duterte, who they say has sanctioned thousands of extrajudicial killings to combat the drug problem in the Philippines.
Amazing.
A leaked transcript of the Trump-Duterte conversation was published by the Washington Post and the news website The Intercept.
Now, it appears that the leaked transcript came from the Philippines government because it was on their letterhead, although we don't know for sure. And, you know, Trump is on a crusade to find the leakers. By the way, I have an issue with painting leakers as bad people, because many leakers, I believe, are whistleblowers. And I think whistleblowers deserve a hero's thank you. Tomorrow on the program, John Kiriakou will be here. John Kiriakou, if you don't know, worked. He was a CIA operative, and he blew the whistle on torture. Okay, and for that he went to jail. He's got a new book out, not about being a whistleblower, but about his time in prison, which is fascinating. I got to tell you. So the Obama administration was one of the worst offenders of going after whistleblowers. I think whistleblowers are so important. Someone who's gonna turn in the people in government who are evildoers, the ones who are doing things they shouldn't be doing. If someone is, you know, in the White House and knows that, oh, for instance, Jeff Sessions didn't fill in any of his past meetings with foreign dignitaries or officials on his security clearance forms, we have a right to know that. Whistleblowers, I think, are an intrinsic part of society, a free press and a free society. And the fact that it was the Obama administration who punished more whistleblowers under the Espionage Act than probably any other president in history is nauseating. But for this guy to be going after whistleblowers the way he is really makes me sick. And well, we've got more we'll get to. Let me just get there in order. Anyway, so that was the story from CNN. But Rachel Maddow last night found out there was actually more in that leaked telephone call transcript between Duterte and Trump, where Dump once again gave out classified information.
The government of the Philippines has now released a transcript of their president talking to President Trump. Now, we had heard about this conversation before, but now we've got some new details. In addition to Trump praising Philippines President Duterte for his drug policies, which are thought to be responsible for the extrajudicial killings of thousands of people, the Philippine government transcript of that conversation also indicates that the President of the United States appears to have decided of his own accord, once again, to blurt out some fairly highly classified information to a foreign leader. In this case, he appears to have given President Duterte of the Philippines the location of two U.S. nuclear submarines.
Submarines!
The location of U.S. nuclear subs is classified information that does not get publicized by the Pentagon except in highly specific and deliberate instances. In this case, it was disclosed to the president of the Philippines, apparently just because the president was on the phone with him.
This man cannot keep his fucking mouth shut. I don't know what is wrong with him, but he can't keep his mouth shut. You know what? I have this piece in What's News, but I'm going to play it for you anyway. Theresa May, Prime Minister of Great Britain, was so incensed that the New York Times and other American media outlets were printing the name of the bomber, the Manchester bomber, before they had released it. That, you know, she's blaming it all on Trump, as she should.
Shortly, I will be traveling to the NATO summit, where I will be working with international colleagues on defeating terrorism. I will make clear to President Trump that intelligence that is shared between our law enforcement agencies must remain secure.
Well, apparently, not only the UK, but a number of countries are now, they're saying one thing on, you know, openly, but quietly, they are not sharing as much intelligence as they used to. They do not trust this president, and for good reason. So there's that kind of leaking where, you know, Trump's kind of loose lips because he's just so full of himself that he's like, I got information you don't have. Just to prove it, here's what I know, and you didn't know that before. Aren't I great? Because that's how he thinks, because he's got the mind of a third grader. But there's more. There's more. Now, this doesn't necessarily go along with the leaking, but the perhaps it does go under the Espionage Act. I'll just let I'll let MSNBC tell you the story.
Three sources, including at least one current U.S. official, telling the New York Times that intelligence shows Russia was focused on certain Trump aides during the campaign. Reading from this news story, quote, Russian officials were discussing how to exert influence over Trump through his advisors. The conversations focused on Paul Manafort and Michael Flynn. The Times reports that Russian officials became confident they could use Manafort and Flynn for a specific goal, that both men could be used to help shape Mr. Trump's opinions on Russia. Though ultimately, it is unknown whether Russian officials actually tried to directly influence Manafort and Flynn.
Oh, I'm sure they did directly try to influence Manafort and Flynn. Look, they're two mental midgets. It's not that hard to influence them. So that was the New York Times' big bombshell yesterday. Of course, the Washington Post had their own. We'll get to that in What's News. What else? There was more news that actually came down after. Hold on one second. That it came down after I finished What's News Today that I want to share with you. And that is the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals largely affirms the nationwide injunction blocking Trump's travel ban. Yes. Let's see. Ari Melber tweeted, Fourth Circuit upholds injunction against Trump travel ban, noting president's power to deny entry to immigrants is broad, but, quote, not absolute. Bingo. Let's see. From the Washington Post, a federal appeals court today upheld a nationwide ban on enforcing President Trump's revised travel ban. The decision by the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals based in Richmond, Virginia, said Trump's executive order restricting travel from several predominantly Muslim countries, quote, drips with religious intolerance, animus, and discrimination. Yeah. It does. And this, the day after this guy meets with the Pope, I loved the gifts the Pope gave to Trump. Really do, because included among them were his vision for world peace, at a time when Trump is trying to get $50 billion plus more in his budget for military, to increase the military, when he cuts all the social safety programs, all protections for the poor, for the elderly, for, Social Security disability insurance. I mean, across the Meals on Wheels, everything you can imagine, programs that help people in need, they cut in order so he can increase the military. And the Pope gave him his paper on his vision for world peace. He also gave him the encyclical on climate change. And yes, that's another department that slashed. The EPA slashed to basically nothing. And of course, the guy who Trump put in charge of the EPA believes that global warming is a hoax. Yeah, so there's that. What else? Oh, I know. Speaking of the budget, I got to play this for you from here. Stephen Colbert, he summed it up better than I could. So take it away, Stephen. Tell us about the $2 trillion mistake, please.
President Trump is still on his semester abroad and getting those extra credits. And he might want to stay over there for a little while until the fireman can put out his budget proposal. Because not only does nobody like it, but it turns out it has a huge mistake in it. Not the part about cutting funding for cancer research. That's just one of his passion projects.
You think?
It turns out that the entire budget is based on a $2 trillion math error. Now, yes, that's trillion with a T. Now, there's a simple explanation for how this happened. Donald Trump is an idiot. Or...
Oh, yeah. Or, that deserves a ding.
Or he's lying, because his budget claims there will be magically $2 trillion of new tax revenue from economic growth when we cut rich people's taxes. It's called trickle-down, something we know Trump loves. And then, then it factors in the same made-up $2 trillion again as a way to offset that tax cut for the wealthy. That's like robbing Peter to to pay Paul, but you're paying Paul with a Blockbuster gift certificate. It doesn't work anymore. This is such an accounting blunder that former Secretary of the Treasury Larry Summers called it a logical error of the kind that would justify failing a student in an introductory economics course.
That's brilliant.
Or,
oh my God.
Or get you tenure at Trump University. But Trump's budget director, Mick Mulvaney, defended the math.
Regarding the double counting, here's one of the things I think that a lot of folks have overlooked. And we did it on purpose because it's sort of hard to count this and you don't want to make too many assumptions.
Yeah. You don't want to make assumptions because when you assume, you make an ass out of you, Mick Mulvaney.
Yes, you do. You know what Mick Mulvaney is? Tell him, Keith.
Asshole.
Thank you. We played the asshole song for Mick Mulvaney yesterday. So there's Stephen Colbert. But I missed the $2 trillion mistake part. It's kind of a big mistake, you know. But, you know, hey, according to Ben Carson, that's okay. $2 trillion. You can lose it and just go out on the street. And if you've got the right mindset, you're all good. Yeah. Fuck you. All right. So today... That brings us to today. And Trump goes to Brussels, you know, the place he formerly called a dump, to meet with the other neighbor, other members of NATO, who he formerly, what did he call NATO? He badmouthed them. And then he made up, allegedly. But he had a short speech there at this beautiful new headquarters for NATO in Brussels. Don't worry, I'm not going to play the whole thing for you. In fact, I've got a clip in What's News, so I'm not even going to play that. But I am going to. What he did was, instead of reinforcing Article 5, which basically says all for one and one for all, you know, you hit one of us, you hit all of us. It's only been invoked once, and that was after 9/11, when all the other NATO countries came to our defense. That's what it was there for, to reiterate. However, Mark Knoller tweeted out, Spicer says there was no need for President Trump to explicitly endorse NATO Article 5 because that was the purpose of the event. That's like there was no need for Trump to mention the Jews in the Holocaust Remembrance Day message they put out. That kind of insanity. Anyway, but the one thing that I did leave out was in What's News, you'll hear Trump scolding the other leaders of NATO for not paying their fair share. And honestly, there's a little bit of validity there, but this is not the place or the time to bring it up. But then Trump, after he scolds them, and you'll hear a sliver of that in What's News, I won't repeat it because, you know, too much of his voice will make anybody go insane. This part I left out, and when I heard it, I almost did a double take. He actually said this.
And I never asked once what the new NATO headquarters cost. I refuse to do that. But it is beautiful.
I never asked once what it cost, because he had to bring up the cost of the new building, which is quite beautiful. Anyway, it's Thursday, so Howie Klein's here. We got an election going on in Montana. There's other stuff going on. So let's take a break. We'll check in with What's News. We'll get the rest of the news, and then back with Howie Klein next, right here on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
I read the news today.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The Congressional Budget Office on Wednesday released its score on TrumpCare 2.0, finding that the bill would increase the projected number of people without health insurance by 14 million next year and by 23 million in 2026. The Senate has said it'll make substantial changes to the bill passed by the House, but Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell admitted, quote, I don't know how we get to 50 votes at the moment. The CBO estimates insurance premiums would rise 850% for elderly and poor people over the next decade if Republican's second version of the bill becomes law. Under Obamacare, 64-year-olds making $26,500 a year would likely pay $1,700 in annual premiums in 2026. Under the GOP bill, they would pay anywhere between $13,600 to $16,100. That's an 850% increase. Meanwhile, voters in Montana head to the polls on Thursday in a special election to replace now Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke in Congress. On Wednesday, Ben Jacobs, a reporter for The Guardian, attempted to ask the Republican candidate, Greg Gianforte, for a comment on the CBO score when the candidate body slammed him. The incident was captured on Jacobs' audio recorder.
And, what, yeah, and we'll talk to you about that later.
Yeah, but there's not going to be time. I'm just curious if you have the
speak
right
with
now.
Shane, please.
But you
I'm sick and tired of you guys. The last Jesus time you came here, you did the same thing. Get the hell out of here.
Jesus.
Get the hell out of here. The last guy did the same thing. You were the guardian?
Yes, and you just broke my glasses.
You, the last guy did the same damn thing.
You just body slammed me and broke my glasses.
Get the hell out of here.
You'd like me to get the hell out of here, I'd also like to call the police. Can I get you guys' names?
Hey, you gotta leave.
He just body slammed me.
You gotta leave.
Jacobs is heard asking for the names of the witnesses, who happen to be a Fox television crew. Reporter Alicia Acuna wrote that, quote, Gianforte grabbed Jacobs by the neck with both hands and slammed him into the ground behind him. Faith, Keith, and I watched in disbelief as Gianforte then began punching the man as he moved on top of the reporter and began yelling something to the effect of, I'm sick and tired of this. Gianforte has been charged with assault. The Washington Post latest bombshell reveals a dubious document at the center of James Comey's decision to detail the FBI's findings in the Hillary Clinton email case without Justice Department input. The document reportedly describes an email supposedly written by then Democratic National Committee Chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz and sent to Leonard Bernardo of the George Soros organization Open Society Foundations. Schultz and Bernardo said they never were interviewed by the FBI and, in fact, do not know one another. But according to people familiar with the matter, by August, the FBI had come to the conclusion that there was nothing to substantiate the document's claims and may have been planted as a fake to confuse the FBI. Comey made his announcement in July. In other Russia-related intelligence news, CNN reports,
Justice Department officials are telling CNN that Attorney General Jeff Sessions did not disclose meetings he had last year with Russian officials when he applied for a security clearance. Now, this new information from the Justice Department is just the latest example of Sessions not listing contacts he had with Russian officials earlier this year. Now, earlier this year, he came under withering criticism from Democrats after it was revealed that he did not disclose the same contacts with the Russian ambassador Sergei Kislyak during his Senate confirmation hearings. Now, Sessions met with Kislyak at least two times last year, including at the Republican National Convention. And he did not note those interactions on this forum, which actually, Wolf, requires him to list, quote, any contact he had or his family had with a, quote, foreign government or its representatives over the past 7 years. Now, Sessions' initial failure to disclose these same meetings led him to actually recuse himself from all matters related to the Russia investigation, though he has said he does not recall discussing campaign matters with meetings with Kislyak.
When they meet today in Brussels at the NATO conference, British Prime Minister Theresa May said she'd have a few words with the U.S. president about his handling of classified info in the wake of the Manchester bombings.
I will make clear to President Trump that intelligence that is shared between our law enforcement agencies must remain secure.
Trump has asked for a complete review of leaks from U.S. government agencies and promised to get to the bottom of it. In his remarks at the opening of a 9/11 memorial at NATO headquarters, he admonished the other NATO nations for not shouldering more of the cost of defense.
23 of the 28 member nations are still not paying what they should be paying and what they are supposed to be paying for their defense. This is not fair to the people and taxpayers of the United States. And many of these nations owe massive amounts of money from past years and not paying in those past years. Over the last 8 years, the United States spent more on defense than all other NATO countries combined. If all NATO members had spent just 2% of their GDP on defense last year, we would have had another $119 billion for our collective defense and for the financing of additional NATO reserves.
That's today's look at What's News. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. What's News and the Nicole Sandler Show are 100% listener supported, and we depend on your help to keep going. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
The Nicole Sandler Show is 100% listener-supported. Have you given yet? Nicole decided not to put her show behind a paywall, knowing that many can't afford the luxury of paying for a podcast. But if you're able to, she needs your financial support to continue doing this. Consider a monthly subscription. You'll get all the regular shows and have access to the new Monday Music Show podcast and The Vault at NicoleSandler.com, plus bonus content. Give when you can. Just visit NicoleSandler.com/donate. Remember, she can't do this without you. Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink 200 calories and it's acidic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Ah, hey, Howie Klein.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well, and you?
Pretty good.
Good.
Just writing an exciting post. I just got off the phone with a young candidate who's probably going to run against Tom MacArthur. Remember Tom MacArthur? He's a New Jersey congressman who sat down with... the Freedom Caucus.
Yes.
He's supposedly a mainstream conservative, and he sat down with the radicals to quote get Trump care better.
Right.
End quote.
Yeah, and that's what gave us
came up with something even worse.
Right. Exactly. That's what gave us what we got the CBO score on yesterday. That'll leave 23 million people uninsured, and cost a whole lot, like $31 million more than Trump Care 1.0.
$1 billion.
$1 billion. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah.
$1 billion.
$1 billion more.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yes.
So anyway, this guy, Andy Kim, is thinking about running in the district. He hasn't made a decision yet. So I just spent an hour on the phone talking with him and going over the things about the politics of that district. And, you know, I was giving him some warnings about the DCCC and what they're up to.
Now, that's a different Andy Kim, right? It's not the Rock Me Slowly guy, right?
No, different guy. This Andy Kim worked. He was the head of the Iraq desk in the West Wing when Obama was president.
Ah.
So he's very concerned about national security. So I wanted to talk to him because sometimes these guys lose sight of other issues, and they just all about national security. Andy wasn't like that at all. He was a strong progressive. I didn't have to, do much more than just say, why don't you tell me a little bit about your positions, for him to start talking about, all the positions that people who supported Bernie in the primary were excited about. So he seems like a real good candidate.
Oh, sounds good. And so where is MacArthur? Where is that seat?
That's in South Jersey. It's an interesting district. It starts in the suburbs northeast of Philadelphia, which is where Andy grew up, and then it goes straight across the state. There's this thing called the Pine Barrens in the middle of the district that separates – basically there are two counties, so Burlington County, which is the Philly suburbs basically – and then on the other side is the Jersey Shore. It goes all the way to the ocean, so it's Tom's River and south.
Okay.
I don't know how much you know about New Jersey,
yeah,
but that's
Philly area,
two very
right?
different parts of New Jersey that don't really have much in common. I mean, you know, the Philadelphia area and the Jersey Shore are two very separate kind of
right.
districts. And he's real familiar with the Burlington area, which is where, like I said, where he's from and where he went to school. But he doesn't know much about Ocean County part, or, you know, he knows what everybody knows, but he doesn't have the same kind of intense knowledge. And he's there now. When I was talking to him, he was sort of doing a little tour of Ocean County and meeting people and talking with them and trying to figure out as much as he could about the county.
Great. I love it when you bring up these people who've just decided to run, especially, look, it's great when someone comes out of the private sector and steps up and says, I'm going to run. But somebody who's got the credentials, who does know their way around government, but who hasn't necessarily been a political person before and says, you know, I got to throw my hat in the ring because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, well, that's a good description of Andy. He said he never imagined he was going to run for Congress or anything else. He was just, doing his job at the White House, not thinking about it. And then this whole nightmare that ensued from MacArthur, his own congressman, working with the Freedom Caucus to take get 23 million people off health insurance, that just struck him as something, you know, deeply, deeply wrong that he had to do something about. And there is no other candidate, and it's a winnable seat. Recently there was a Democrat in there. The problem is, again, with the DCCC, their idea is, well, this is a district where you have to have a Republican-like candidate. So they always try to recruit these very conservative type Democrats, and they got one in this guy named I don't want to talk too badly about him because he died, and I don't like the idea of talking badly about the dead, but a guy named John Adler, who was a conservative state legislator in New Jersey, and they got him to run for Congress, and it was 2008 or it might have been 2006, but it was one of the Democratic wave elections. So like what we have probably coming in 2018, where everybody got elected, any plausible candidate got elected. They just wanted to get the Republicans out of power. So Adler got in and then, immediately did what anyone who was watching closely knew he would do, started voting with the Republicans. He joined the Blue Dogs and basically was a Republican with a D next to his name. And he had a D next to his name for Democrat, but his score from Progressive Punch was an F.
Right.
Really as bad as they come. And then he lost in the next midterm. The next midterm comes along, and Democrats in that district look and they say, well, why would we vote for him? Why bother going to the polls to vote for a Democrat who's really a Republican? So they didn't go. So Democrats just sat out the race. And a Republican beat him, even though he outspent the Republican 3-1. And then it's been in Republican hands ever since. And the Democrats, the DCCC's way to try to take it back has been to run these very conservative candidates, starting with this guy's widow. They ran her, and she went nowhere. And their idea was just, let's just run conservatives. That's what they do.
Wow.
And I don't know how they're going to feel about Andy. I mean, they probably liked the idea that he worked in the White House. They liked, but they probably aren't going to be, terribly thrilled that he's a real progressive. But we'll see.
Okay.
I, in between the time that I spoke to him and you called me just now,
yeah.
In between that time, I did one thing. I introduced him to Ted Lieu.
Great. Ted Lieu has my favorite tweet of the day, or my favorite picture of the day.
Yes, mine too. I love it.
It's awesome.
I wish we could show it on this radio show.
Well,
now.
Well, we are on YouTube. I just put, if for people watching on YouTube, I just put it up. So there's Ted Lieu's office door, and underneath it, there are two white pieces of paper. The first one says "Alternative Facts Free Zone." Period. And then below,
and that's been up on his door, by the way, for several months now.
Oh, has
that
it?
First that
oh,
first
that's
piece.
So funny. And then he added a second one to it, and it says also body slam free zone. Of course, that that has to do with what happened in Montana last night. This is unbelievable. So today is election day in Montana, where people have been voting already for early voting. But today is election day, where people vote for either the Democrat, the singing cowboy, Rob Quist, or the body slammer, Greg Gianforte, who actually... a reporter for The Guardian came in. He wanted to ask him his thoughts on the CBO scoring for Trump Care because Gianforte wouldn't give an opinion on the bill. He said he wanted to see, what the CBO said. So they came out with their score yesterday. Reporter goes in with his audio recorder, and the guy slams him. The guy beats him up.
and choked him.
Yeah.
I mean, according to those Fox people, there were three Fox reporters there, and they watched it, and they have now sworn in testimony that they watched Gianforte put his both hands around the reporter's neck and choke him.
That's incredible. Just because the reporter asked
the
question.
The irony is that Fox isn't running that. So here you have three Fox reporters who are witnesses to this thing, and now they're part of the case. They made sworn statements, and Fox isn't running that. Fox is only running Gianforte's lies about how he was attacked by the reporter, which is completely not true.
Right. They're blaming it on the liberal media, which is the most asinine thing I've ever heard. Because we know what the media is. It's not liberal, sadly. And the fact that Fox News, Fox so-called news channel, is not running it all. Ben Jacobs is the reporter's name, yes. The whole thing is insane. So the Fox News channel is covering for him. I think this was a local Fox TV station, but I could be wrong. Or maybe they were.
No, you're right.
Oh, okay. So yeah, Fox News and the local Fox stations aren't necessarily the same thing. But yeah, these reporters, in fact, in the audio tape, you hear the reporter ask, I need to get your names. He was talking to that news crew because they were witnesses. Exactly. And assault charges have been filed against Gianforte. So the question
is... No, I mean, more than assault charges being filed, the sheriff of the county, I think it was the sheriff or the police chief or whoever, has now lodged misdemeanor assault charges against Gianforte.
Wow.
So it's not just a complaint; it's actually the law enforcement authorities have now charged him.
Wow. Now, from what I understand, Rob Quist has declined to comment on it and said, you know, people need to just decide for themselves who they want in office. I mean, he's taking the high road there. But a lot of the activists, the people going door to door, are playing the audio tape for people when they knock on doors.
And supposedly, from what I'm reading, they're getting people who were actually saying they were going to vote for Gianforte, and now they're not going to.
Wow. Oh, that's awesome.
Now, the interesting thing about this race is – okay, before I tell you the interesting thing about this race, I want to set it up with an example.
Okay,
there's a race in California 34 right now, right next – the district right next to mine. And that's in a couple of weeks. It's next in June. June 6th is that election. So there have been 14,000 ballots that have been turned in so far. So 14,000 mail-in ballots have come in. They expect something between 40 and 45,000 people will participate in this election total. So that will be all the early votes plus the people on election day will total between 40 and 45,000. That's what the voter turnout is going to be in California 34 for the special election to fill Becerra's seat.
Ah, okay. He is now Secretary
now,
of State.
The reason I said that is because I want to contrast those numbers with the numbers in Montana. Okay. So far, in as of yesterday, 260-some-odd thousand voters have mailed in ballots. So 14,000 in this LA district, 260,000 in Montana. Look at that difference.
Wow.
And in Montana, they expect that over 500,000 people will vote. So more than 10 times more than vote in that LA district. And these districts have approximately the same population. So that's what I'm trying to point out is there is tremendous interest in this special election. Interest is on both sides. The problem is that there are a lot of people who I'm assuming, and I could be wrong about this, but I'm assuming a lot of those people who voted for the Republican may be sorry now.
Yes.
After seeing this violence take place and seeing Gianforte just like completely lose his mind. I mean, you heard that tape.
Yeah.
I mean, guy obviously was out of his skull. You think do you really want someone like that in Congress?
And
you can't change your mind when you vote early like that. That's your vote.
Right. That's the problem with early voting. And they're saying a lot of people did vote early, that there was a pretty huge early voting turnout. So
260,000. $100,000, probably about half or around half of what's going to be the turnout. Although there is one good thing about this, because Montana has a Democratic governor and has for quite some time had Democratic governors, and occasionally they'll have a Democratic majority in the legislature. They were able to pass same-day registration there.
Yes.
So even people who are unregistered, who decide after seeing this spectacle last night, decide they want to vote, they can register today and go and vote in Montana today.
Which is great. So you still have time. If you're in Montana, you know anyone in Montana. I know one person in Montana. Her name is Michelle Wolf. She programs a really good radio station in Bozeman called The Moose.
Bet that she's probably voting for Rob Quist anyway.
I have no doubt. No doubt. Yeah. So but this could happen. I mean, has there been any polling done there?
Yes, there's been quite a lot of polling. So the polling started out. Okay, just as a little background, Montana is an interesting state. People think, oh, it's just this red state. It's not. It's a purple state. So Hillary was the wrong candidate for Montana, and Trump won by quite a lot. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he had about a 20% margin over Hillary. He won almost the whole state. Mm. She did very badly. Now, Bernie did really, really well. By the way, in the primary, he not only did he win Montana in the primary, he won almost all the counties.
Wow.
Hillary won a few, but he won. I mean, the main county that you've got to win in Montana, if you're a Democrat, where you've got to like really roll up the votes, is Missoula.
Mm-hmm.
Missoula County, that's the one that Democrats have to get big, big numbers in. And Bernie won that county, but he didn't just beat Hillary in that county. Remember, the Democrats voted and the Republicans voted. Bernie beat Hillary, so he won the county. But you know what else he did?
Not only
did he beat Trump, he beat Trump, Bush, Rubio,
wow,
Cruz, and Kasich all combined.
Wow.
So they were the ones that were getting at that time when that primary was running. They were all in it still. Bernie, I don't remember the exact number, but just to say around 15,000. He got around 15,000 votes in the primary. All the Republicans combined had less than 10,000. They liked Bernie there, and
yes,
Bernie was just in Montana. He did the four biggest cities in the state,
mm-hmm,
with Rob Quist. And they had huge turnouts. I mean,
in fact,
the first one was in Missoula.
In the chat room.
And they were scheduled to perform. It's like a concert.
Right.
They were scheduled to speak in front of 7,500 people or 2,500 people, and they had to move it to a 7,500 seat venue because it was sold out.
Yeah. Well, Lee CD in the chat room is saying 13,000 people showed up at the Rob Quist rally with Bernie Sanders last week. So one, I guess, that she knew of. 13,000 people in Montana. That's a pretty big turnout.
It is. It's a real big turnout for an off-cycle special election. It's pretty amazing. So in terms of the polling, yes, when the polling started, Quist was way ahead. He was about 10 points ahead. And it just every week the polling would get closer and closer and closer. You know, everyone would say, oh, it's in single digits now. Oh, it's 5 points. It's winnable. And then I started seeing this internal polling that isn't public polling. And the one that really interested me the most was a Republican internal poll that showed Quist had pulled ahead by 1 point. So 1 point is under the margin of error. So
sure,
it doesn't really tell you a lot. It doesn't really mean that Quist is winning. It means that they're tied. And that's what the situation was going into the election. The two of them were tied, which generally means whoever has the better turnout to vote ground game, anyone who paid attention to field, is going to win.
Sure.
And I don't know the answer to that. I know the DCCC is very opposed to good field operation. They think it's a waste of money. They won't tell you that, but they don't spend money on it. And the reason for that is because for the staffers to get their cut,
right,
of the big cash that comes in, they've got to spend it on TV advertising. That's where they get the 15% and 20% cut for these crooked staffers who work at the DCCC, who go in and out. You know, one year they're at the DTrip, the next year they're in a consulting firm, and the guys who are in their old jobs recommend them, and then the next cycle they go back into the DTrip, and then the guys guys who recommended them go to a consulting firm, and then they recommend them. And
right.
then they get these – they become millionaires that way. Literally, they become millionaires. When they work at the DCCC, they don't become millionaires. They have modest salaries. But then the next cycle, or the cycle after that, they go out and they're entrepreneur consultants, and they make millions of dollars. And that's what these crooks do. And therefore, when they work at the DCCC, they discourage Democratic candidates from investing too much money in field. So I know that the Bernie people are not excited about wasting money on nonsensical TV, and they're really, really field-oriented. So I'm hoping that the Bernie folks encourage Rob to put his resources into field. If they did, he's going to win. If he spent a lot on field, He will win this election, because this election is about turn out the vote. It's all about getting out the vote. The whole thing is that.
Right. And then combined with Gianforte's temper problem. This could be it. I'm still stunned. Have you ever heard of a story like this before? You know, on election eve, the guy goes ballistic on a reporter.
Not since the 1800s, there was some of that stuff, not necessarily against the reporter, but there was quite a bit of political violence. There was killing. There were people would have duels and chop each other's limbs off with swords. So, but that hasn't happened in the last like 120, 30, 40 years.
Well, there are some who would like to take us back there. Howie Klein's with us. So, Howie, you have a piece up at downwithtyranny.com from yesterday. The DCCC has another terrible idea, copying the 2006 midterms, a recipe for catastrophe. What's going on with Rahm Emanuel?
Exactly. So Rahm Emanuel was the head of the DCCC in 2006.
Right.
The DNA of the DCCC is what he implanted in it then. Even though he's no longer there, he's the mayor of Chicago now, terrible mayor of Chicago, the DCCC still is a ROM organization. And this whole idea of we need self-funders, we need Republican-like candidates, we need to keep these fucking progressives out of the seats, we need blue dogs, we need new Dems, that all came from Rahm Emanuel. That's his mode. And the chairman that came after him just keep following it. And then the other day, boom, there's the announcement the DCCC is going to Rahm for advice about how to run the campaigns for 2018.
Unreal.
And what my story is about was I tried to lay out the facts. Look at all of Rahm's candidates, the ones that he recruited, all these blue dogs and new Dems that won in 2006. They won. They ran as Democrats. Then they got into Congress in 2006 and 2008, two wave elections for Democrats. And then in 2010, they got defeated. And the reason they got defeated, as I was saying earlier, they voted with the Republicans. They disappointed the people who put them into office. And then in the midterms, those Democrats just didn't go out and vote. They just said, you know, why bother? Why should I go out and vote for these people's lousy careers when they're not supporting the things that I thought they were going to support when I voted for them originally? And then that's why they got defeated. That guy John Adler, who I was talking about earlier in New Jersey, he's an example. But there were dozens and dozens and dozens of examples all over the country. And when you look at the people who are still in Congress, or in some cases back in Congress now, from that year, from 2006 and 2008, those are the people Rahm didn't recruit, but those are the people who Rahm tried to keep from getting into office. Rahm was opposed, for example, Carol Shea Porter. He had his own candidate. He was against Carol Shea Porter. Carol Shea Porter beat Rahm's candidate in the primary, and then Rahm pulled out of New Hampshire and said, screw you, we're not
wow.
supporting you. She won anyway. She beat the Republican incumbent. Same thing on the other side of the country in California, where Jerry Pombo, I don't know if you remember his name, but he was the head of the Natural Resources Committee. He was the worst polluter in Congress. He was the chairman of the committee, the Republican chairman, and Jerry McNerney went after him, and Rahm ran this guy, Steve Dyson or something, I can't remember his name. Rahm ran some, you know, corporate chill kind of guy, and McNerney beat the guy in the primary, and Rahm said, screw you, and got at, and had no interest in helping McNerney, and McNerney beat Pombo. That was one of the biggest upsets of that whole year. A Democrat who wasn't even being supported by the DCCC threw out a hugely powerful, very, very, very well-funded Republican committee chairman. And yet Rahm tries to take, and Rahm's apologists try to take credit for these kinds of candidates. I mean, McNerney is still in Congress. Carol Shea Porter, who is out of Congress, is back in Congress. And several other candidates who I talk about in the post that you referenced, these were not Rahm people. The Rahm people aren't in Congress anymore. They got defeated because they voted with the Republicans all the time. The ones who didn't get defeated were the ones that were real Democrats. And some of the – I shouldn't make that – I mean, that's a generality, and there were some exceptions to it. Unfortunately, some people got swept away in the Republican wave of 2010. Some good people were kicked out of office, including Alan Grayson, by the way, who then came back a cycle later. John Hall was another one. He was a good candidate who Rahm opposed, won the primary, and then beat the Republican incumbent without Rahm's help. And then he wound up in the great wave of 2010, the great Republican wave. He got swept away as well. So there were good people who lost out. But basically, it was Rahm's people who lost out. It was all these blue dogs and new Dems, what I call the Republican wing of the Democratic Party. Sure. They're the ones that lost out. By the way, do you notice how different I sound? Do you notice my voice, the strength of my voice?
You sound great.
I want to say something about that, if you don't mind. Oh, I know it takes us a little bit away.
That's fine.
But I was coughing and choking on your show for like the last few months.
Yeah.
And was really, really sick and very, very worried, and sometimes I couldn't breathe. I was choking so much.
Yeah.
And I was seeing the head of a pulmonary institute, who's a really world-famous doctor at the City of Hope.
Right.
And he was trying to, we tried everything. And finally he said to me, would you be up for trying marijuana on this? And I said, sure.
Wow.
And he said, let's do it.
And so
you hear the result right now.
Wow. This is from medical marijuana.
Marijuana. This isn't stuff I'm smoking. This is some oil that's just it's called CBD oil.
Sure.
So it doesn't have the stuff that may get you high, the THC.
Yeah.
You have to take a little THC in there in order to activate the CBD. But I don't really get stoned. I mean, at first you get a little bit stoned when you first start, but now I don't get stoned anymore. I mean, when I first started it, I did tiny bit. I couldn't really drive my car, but now I'm fine.
Howie, that's amazing, because you sound great. I was noticing you sound, your voice is strong. Not only are you not coughing, but you're sounding wonderful.
I feel great. And the irony is, from the other stuff, I wind up with neuropathy, and even though I didn't take the marijuana to help me with the neuropathy, it is helping with the neuropathy.
Wow.
The magic drug.
Yeah,
really,
I'm going to have to try that for the neuropathy then, because I've got that from my surgery.
Use some CBD oil. I mean, it would be great if you could get a doctor who knew about it, who could tell you about the doses and the types that you need and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know it either. And I'd love to find someone who knows exactly how to use marijuana for neuropathy. There are people who, and I need to find someone who can advise me on that. That's
exactly the problem, because it's still a Schedule I narcotic in this country for some ridiculous reason. Thank you, Jeff Sessions, too. that there haven't been enough studies done. But there was a big story on one of the nightly news shows the other night that we saw about kids taking it, and they finally did a full-on study for kids with epilepsy, and they're life-changing results.
Yep. I mean, I was literally laying on the floor choking so much that I couldn't breathe, and I'd be kicking my legs out with all my strength to be able to get my breath back.
Wow.
And that, I haven't had that in weeks now. I mean, that's gone. I had it for months, and now it's completely gone, and it's completely, totally because of this marijuana. How we got from talking about Rahm Emanuel to talking about medical marijuana is just amazing to
me. It's a great way to end the show, because that's such wonderful news. I'm so glad to hear it. And again, you sound terrific. So that's so encouraging. I love it. We're still waiting for Florida to get its shit together. You know, we voted for medical marijuana back in November. The legislative session ended and they couldn't get their shit together to write the legislation. So now we're waiting
on... are trying to, you know, drag it along sabotage it.
Of course. That's exactly what's going on. So to be continued. Howie Klein, down with tyranny in the Blue America Pack. It's such great news. Thank you for ending the show on an up note.
All right. Say a little prayer for Rob.
Will do. Yes. Everyone think Montana. You know, get us some dental floss and go to Montana soon. All right. Frank Zappa reference there. Thank you, Howie Klein.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, what great news, huh? Oh, I love hearing that. All right, with that, I can leave the show happy. So I will leave you with the Green News Report. Don't forget, tomorrow we will officially end the week and go into a long weekend with John Kiriakou, the whistleblower, CIA whistleblower, who spent a couple of years in prison, and he'll tell us all about it. All right. God, I love ending on good news. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow. Here's Brad and Desi.
It's Thursday, May 25, 2017.
That budget that Trump has presented is a grotesquely immoral budget.
Trump's proposed budget cuts deeply into the environment. Mudslide buries California's iconic Pacific Coast Highway. Wind farm company proposes to retrain coal miners to be wind technicians for free. Plus,
the Pope gifts three of his encyclicals, one including his views on climate change.
Pope Francis offers a gift and a message to President Trump.
All of those gifts, all of those messages straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The National Science Foundation last year used your taxpayer money to fund a climate change musical. Do you think that's a waste of your money?
No. I love musicals. This is your Green News Report.
And people need to learn about climate change.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, you have been digging into Donald Trump's proposed budget. We've been speaking about how terrible it would be for the environment, but you have found it is even worse than that.
Yes, more details are emerging. It cuts everything non-military deeply to finance increased defense spending and a massive tax cut for the wealthiest Americans. In addition to the 30% cut to the budget of the Environmental Protection Agency, the Trump administration proposes pushing more environmental responsibilities onto the states, but then also cuts grants to the states by nearly half for everything from upgrading water infrastructure to toxic waste cleanup. The Great Lakes Protection Fund, which cleans up the drinking water supply for more than 20 million people, would be completely eliminated. That would leave the task solely to states like Ohio, which is already struggling with chronic toxic algae blooms in Lake Erie that have shut down water intakes for the city of Toledo's water supply. The National Park Service, which generates billions in tourism dollars in the states, would be cut by more than 80%. And despite Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt's recent promises to refocus the EPA's mission on Superfund site cleanups, Trump cuts the Superfund program by 25%.
Because, of course, he does. But that's just what you say. Scott Pruitt, head of the EPA, said this on Fox News.
The past administration talked a lot. This administration's actually taking steps to do things to clean up the environment.
That was before the budget proposal came out.
Oh, so he was lying to Fox News.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll be very upset about it.
The Washington Post reports the Trump administration is also drafting plans to sell off and privatize public assets like bridges, airports, and even highway rest stops, and encourage the states to do so as well, and also accelerate the environmental permitting process for new infrastructure like pipelines.
Well, those highway rest stops are just there to keep people safe on the road so they have a place to rest. They're not making anybody any money. That needs to be fixed, Desi Doyen.
Independent Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont on MSNBC called the entire budget proposal immoral and pledged to fight it in the Senate.
Environmental programs will be decimated in this country. It is an outrageous budget. It is a budget that the American people do not want. It's a budget that should not see the light of day in the U.S. Senate.
Speaking of morality, on President Trump's overseas trip, Pope Francis gave Trump a nudge on climate change during his visit to the Vatican on Wednesday. Francis gave Trump a copy of his landmark encyclical on the environment, which calls action on climate change a moral duty. Activists projected an image of the words "Planet Earth First" onto the massive dome of St. Peter's Basilica, and Vatican officials pressed Trump to stay in the United Nations Paris Climate Agreement.
Donald Trump also reportedly promised he would read those books from the Pope. Do you think he will?
Probably not.
Is lying to the Pope any kind of high, amazing sin?
There's probably a joke about something in the woods right about now. Here in the U.S., the Justice Department sued automaker Fiat Chrysler this week, alleging the company installed secret software to cheat U.S. emissions tests, very similar to the Volkswagen emissions cheating scandal last year. Fiat Chrysler could be liable for up to $4.5 billion in fines for fraud and illegal pollution from its Jeep Grand Cherokees and Ram diesel pickup trucks sold since 2014. By the way, the vehicle testing lab that caught Volkswagen and Fiat Chrysler is also slated for a massive budget cut. In California, a massive landslide has buried a section of California's iconic Highway 1 in Big Sur under a 40-foot layer of rock and dirt. Likely the largest landslide in the state's history, extreme rains have caused more than $1 billion in damage to California's highways in more than 400 locations thanks to El Niño's extreme weather. Finally, a wind farm company has announced a free training program starting next month in Wyoming to retrain local former coal miners as wind turbine technicians to meet the needs for its newest wind farm. The kicker? It's a Chinese manufacturer. In other words, a Chinese company is tapping unemployed energy workers in Wyoming, showing that they can and should be retrained for new energy jobs.
And there's your leadership. Thank you, China. For much more on all of these reports and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. I'm dying.